I meant good morning. Happy Easter and welcome to Unity Church. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you to find and to keep your balance, a place which helps you to live a loving life of integrity and service and joy. I especially want to welcome home our Unity pilgrims who've been traveling with Mano a Mano in Bolivia, learning about the work of that great organization that was founded out of this congregation, and having an opportunity to really take into themselves both the many gifts and the many challenges our friends in Bolivia face. So welcome home, and we look forward to hearing much of what you learned. I'd like to call your attention to This Week at Unity, which serves as an invitation and a roadmap to deeper involvement in the life of the church. This coming Wednesday evening, Wellspring Wednesday, will feature a lecture by Dr. Adil Ozamir, who is a teacher of Islamic studies at St. Thomas and has a great deal to offer us. The evening will also include our usual array of programming for families. Dinner is at 6, family worship at 6:45, and the programs begin at 7:10. If you wish to come for dinner, please make a reservation for dinner at the Wellspring Wednesday table in the parish hall following the service. Now, you need not, however, join us for dinner in order to participate in the programs. So come when you can and enjoy. We hope you'll want to be part of the Unity delegation for the lobbying day at the state capitol in opposition to a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. This is a congregation which has for many years celebrated love where it rises and welcomed and included GLBT people in our congregation. We are firmly opposed to this amendment, and we are hoping that many, many people will gather on Thursday at noon. That's a week from Thursday. There's a table in the parish hall. Church staff is being given the afternoon off so that those who wish to might participate. And we suggest that you invite your employers to join the church in making the same thing possible for you. If not, take vacation time. Following the service this morning, we hope you'll join us for refreshments in the parish hall. There you can see new friends and old, peruse our excellent bookstall, and visit the information tables. If you're interested in becoming a member of Unity Church, please visit the welcome table, which is also in the parish hall. Okay, now, those of you who are deeply attached to sitting on the aisles need to recognize that we have not built churches by pew subscription for a long time, and that, in fact, you can have a positive experience of the service no matter where you're seated. And the reason I'm saying this is it's going to get crowded soon. So if you would move to the center of the aisles so that people can be more comfortably seated, that would be a good thing. Thank you. I know that this is anathema to some. Just breathe deeply and let the day enter your soul. Next week, Jan and Worship Associate Ray McGee will offer the first in a series of services on the dimensions of appetite. What do we hunger for and why? The service is entitled Appetite for Life. Katie, Dottie, Carrie, Jan, and I would like to greet you following the service at the Portland Avenue doors. And once again, welcome to Unity Church.
This morning, we draw courage from the crocus, who again and again risks itself to be among the first to push through frozen soil. Our hearts are enlivened with the sight of birds returning from long journeys. Our optimism is restored by the hopeful chirping of the spring peeper, who has only recently reemerged from the mud and whose message always seems to be, "How can I keep from singing?" We sit this morning in the company of so many reminders that we are allowed more than one birth, that no matter how many times we disappoint ourselves or are disappointed, we have in the next moment another opportunity to meet the holy. Let this season, this day, this time of worship remind each of us that we can be reborn like tender blades of grass reaching for the sun. Come, let us worship together.
Please remain standing and join with me in the unison affirmation number 624 in the back of your hymnal. God of Easter and infrequent spring, announce the large covenant to deceitful lands. Drive the sweet liquor through our parched veins. Lure us to fresh schemes of life. Rouse us from tiredness, self-pity. Whet us for use. Fire us with good passion. Restore in us the love of living. Bind us to fear and hope again. You may be seated.
Every Sunday, we gather for worship, whether here in the sanctuary or in the children's chapel upstairs. We pause for a few moments to hold in the embrace of this loving community, those whose unfolding life stories are particularly rich with joy or heavy with challenge or sorrow. I'll begin this sharing, and following my words, you are all invited to offer the names of those you are holding in your heart and bring into the sanctity of this sacred hour. We remember all those people who live with grief over the loss of a loved one, and we are particularly mindful that that loss often weighs more heavy during a holiday season. We hold in our thoughts and prayers all those people who are recovering from recent illnesses, injuries, and health problems. And we send our thoughts and prayers to those recovering from recent surgeries or going into the hospital this week. We are mindful of Ward Schindel, who's in the hospital entering into surgery tomorrow. We remember those people struggling with disease and chronic illnesses. We especially hold Aaron Vanek and his family in our prayers. Aaron's six-hour surgery performed this past week at Sloan Kettering in New York went as well as it could have gone. Aaron is recuperating, surrounded by family and friends there. His parents, Jen and Charlie Vanek, want to communicate their deep gratitude for all the care that has been shown their family. We hold Glenisha Moore in our prayers as she recovers from her last round of aggressive chemotherapy this past week. We hold Annie Keeler and her family in our prayers as they navigate through Annie's ALS. We hold in our prayers our brothers and sisters around the globe suffering from poverty of spirit, of possibility, those whose lives are filled with uncertainty due to violence, hardship, and war. May we live to see a day when their lives are filled with peace and the promise of abiding freedom. I now invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or bring into the embrace of this caring community. And now will you join with me in a moment of meditation and prayer. O Eternal Spirit, God of many names and beyond all naming, whose presence we find within, among, and beyond us, is everywhere manifest. To all those who remain open to its possibility, but which is most particularly apparent in the ever reoccurrence of life. Touch our lives with gratitude for the small and large ways that resurrection occurs in all life, especially in our weary hearts. As we rest in the awareness of the heights and depths of life, may we be inspired to find ways to once again say yes. Yes to the invitation that is life. May our hearts and minds find new possibility in the living of every day. May an earthly alchemy mix with the substance of our lives, so then our risking to meet the challenge of our days, we are filled with ampler hope and faith in the one life we have been given and held in the holy that sustains us. As we are called to a new vision of our life, may wonder have its way with us, inspiring our weary hearts to open anew. And in that opening, may our life blossom with a beauty beyond our wildest imaginings. May it be so, and amen.
At this time, I'd like to invite the children of the church to come forward to have a children's message with me up here in the chancel. And parents, if you have one with you who's feeling a little bit wiggly or a little bit shy, feel free to come up with them, absolutely. So come on up here. It is Easter. My goodness, you look very Eastery, all of you. What lovely bright colors. So Easter is a fantastic time to talk about miracles. Miracles, those things in the world that make you say, no way, that is so cool. And I've got a miracle story for you today. And the miracle that I'd like to talk about with you today is about an animal. It's an animal that is so Easterishly amazing that I think that maybe we Unitarian Universalists should make it our official Easter animal. Anybody want to hazard any guesses what animal I might be thinking of? Just holler a couple out. Bunnies, maybe birds. What else could I be thinking of? I could be thinking of chicks, right? But I'm thinking of something even cooler. I'm thinking of, yes, frogs. It's a specific kind of frog, a spring peeper. And if you listen, that is the sound that this frog, the spring peeper, makes. This is the spring peeper. It's a frog that lives in Minnesota, and it's not this huge. It actually, if you want to see about what size it is, you can hold your thumb out, and about as big as the last little part of your thumb, where your thumbnail is, that's the size of a spring peeper. Tiny little frog. Look at that. And that peeper makes that noise. And grown-ups might be interested to note that if you look at a peeper, there's always, if you could see it, they're really small. But if you could see it, there's always like a little X or a cross on the back. And the Latin nomenclature for the spring peeper is actually Pseudacris crucifer. And I'll let you contemplate that for a little bit while we talk. So this is a spring peeper, and it lives here in Minnesota. Can you help me guess what part of the ecosystem a spring peeper probably lives in? Where might you find one? What do you think? In the wetlands, exactly. So places like marshes and what else? Swamps, good. And wet forests, yeah, and ponds, right? And sometimes if you're walking or if you're out driving and you roll the windows down, you can hear these peepers because they get together in these big frog parties in these swamps. And they are so loud sometimes. When I went to the park with my dog, these peepers were so loud that she couldn't even hear me whistle over the top of them. They are really loud. So, okay, you might say, well, that noise that we listen to is pretty cool, but what exactly makes this frog miraculous? What's a miracle when it comes to this frog? And I'll tell you about it. Okay, so the story of this peeper starts way back in November. Can you remember back to November? Can you remember this much? Back in November, was it busy getting colder or warmer? In November, was the weather getting colder and colder or warmer and warmer? For sure it was getting colder, right? Because our Minnesota winter was on the way, and every day it kept getting colder and colder and darker and darker. And we all had to live through 5 long months of winter here in Minnesota. Now, this spring peeper frog has the most amazing way of living through the winter. In fact, it might not even seem like living at all. Because here's what happens to the spring peeper frog. Round about November, the spring peeper knows that it's going to get colder and it's got to do something. So the frog's blood starts to get really, really sugary. In fact, it turns almost to pure sugar, glucose, which is kind of how you guys are going to be later this afternoon. And and the glucose goes into the cells of the frog's brain and the cells of the frog's heart and the muscles. And the weird thing about glucose, about sugar, is it doesn't freeze like water does. So it kind of acts like antifreeze. And then when it starts to get really super cold, the peeper finds a spot underneath a log or maybe a rock where there's a little bit of muck and mud that it can kind of scooch down into. And it waits there for Minnesota to freeze over. And as you know, it does. And the frog gets frozen too. Almost everything slows down and stops. The heart slows way down. The frog doesn't move. It doesn't really breathe. If you were out in the woods and you accidentally found a place where a peeper was spending the winter, and you might say, ooh, that's cool, I'm going to put it in my frog jar. You'd drop it in and it'd probably hit the bottom of your jar and go plink, because it'd be frozen solid. It might even look like it was dead. But okay, here's where the miracle part comes in. If you wait, like the peeper does, until April, and the days start to get longer, and the sun starts to warm the earth, and the mud gets, you know, muddy again, the frog warms up too. And 5 months later, the frog will start to wiggle. And its heart will start to beat faster and faster. And pretty soon, once it gets warm enough, the frog will come out from underneath the log and hop away. And you know what's on that frog's thawed brain? The first thing that it thinks of? It thinks, I want to get with a bunch of other frogs right now. Let's find some frogs to be with. And so then all the frogs, they get together in a pond. And you know what all those frogs are thinking about as soon as they all get together? They start thinking, hey, you guys. That's exactly what they do. The frogs, they all look at each other and, hey, you guys, let's sing like crazy. And those frogs start to sing and sing and sing. Now, if that's not a miracle, I don't know what is. And so I'd like to suggest that since it would be a pretty interesting Easter animal to have, I think that we Unitarian Universalists should declare that the spring peeper frog is our spring animal. And it's our Easter symbol because it's an interesting animal, and being a Unitarian at Easter is pretty interesting too. And we could use an interesting animal because, well, even though resurrection, which is something that comes back from death and comes to life, even though resurrection is part of where we came from as Unitarians, and this frog does that same kind of thing, there are a lot of people who believe about resurrection a lot differently than we do. And when I started learning about frogs, I got all excited and I thought, well, maybe I could make an Easter card with a frog on it and write Happy Easter on the inside and send a card like that to everybody that I knew. But then I started thinking, well, sometimes when I wish Happy Easter to friends and family that I know, they kind of look at me like this. And they say, well, you're a Unitarian. You don't even believe in resurrection. Because the story of Easter is the story about a teacher named Jesus who came back from the dead in the story that our Christian friends and neighbors share at Easter. So they would look at me and say, why are you telling me Happy Easter? Because I don't even think you Unitarians believe in resurrection. But I might be able to think about this frog. And I might be able to say to that person, well, you know, you're right. I don't really think about resurrection the same way that you do. But I know something a lot like it. And maybe it can help us to understand each other. But I know that some of my friends would say, well, no, still, I don't think that you get it. You know, at Easter, we celebrate miracles. I don't know if Unitarians understand the Easter miracle. And we can say, oh, yeah, we understand miracles at Easter time. In fact, we celebrate all of the Easter miracles that we can think of. We celebrate the green grass. We celebrate the miracle of the person who is singing right next to us. We celebrate the crocuses that come up through the earth. And we celebrate the spring peeper. We know all about miracles. All you have to do is take a walk with a friend or come here to church or drive somewhere and roll down your window and listen for the spring peeper to remember that spring and Easter are about miracles and we share in those too. Thank you very much for listening to the story, and let's go back with our families and do some more listening and some more singing together. And Happy Easter.
Our Easter offering this Sunday is going to the important work of our restorative justice ministry team. Our restorative justice ministry team trains people in peacemaking circles, and they take this work, the people who are trained in this work, go out into prisons and to schools, congregations, community centers, and help educate people on how we can hear one another in peaceful circles. In addition to the peacemaking circles and training that the restorative justice team is involved in, they are also helping sponsor the first ever conference of gathering people working in prisons, both as volunteers, staff, and chaplains, which will be occurring here next weekend. It's called Behind Bars here at Unity Church, and we are absolutely thrilled about this occurring. In addition to that conference, the restorative justice team also does important work in prisons. We've offered building your own theology in prisons and in correctional facilities, and we befriend prisoners coming out of prison and also who are still incarcerated. So I hope that you will give generously to this important ministry work. And as the ushers come forward, I also want to take this opportunity to honor the important musical ministry of Shirley Lifen, who has been our anchor soprano for over 5 years here at Unity. She just sang a solo here this morning as part of the anthem. Shirley has been offered a job to coordinate and administrate the high school program at Tanglewood. And we are very proud of her and delighted that she is leaving us to do something so vitally important as this program at Tanglewood. And we wish her the very best. But we also want to acknowledge how sad we are at her departure, and we want to honor her many contributions to Unity Church and our worship life together. Thank you, Shirley. Thank you.
from Mark 16. When the Sabbath was over, Mary of Magdala, Mary, the mother of James, and Salome bought aromatic oils, intending to go and anoint him. And very early on in Sunday morning, just after sunrise, they came to the tomb. They were wondering amongst themselves who would roll away the stone for them from the entrance to the tomb when they looked up and saw that the stone, huge as it was already rolled back. They went into the tomb where they saw a youth sitting on the right-hand side wearing a white robe. And they were dumbfounded. But he said to them, "Fear nothing. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised again. He is not here. Look, there is the place where they laid him. But go and give this message to his disciples and Peter. He is going on before you into Galilee. There you will see him, as he told you." Then they went out and ran away from the tomb, beside themselves with terror. They said nothing to anybody, for they were afraid.
Since You Asked, by Lawrence Robb. For a friend who asked to be in a poem. Since you asked, let's make it dinner at your house, a celebration for no reason, which is always the best occasion. Are you worried there won't be enough space, enough food? But in a poem, we can do anything we want. Look how easy it is to add on rooms, to multiply the wine and chickens. And while we're at it, let's take those trees that died last winter and bring them back to life. Things should look pulled together, and we could use the shade, so even now they shudder and unfold their bright new leaves. And now the guests are arriving. Everyone you expected, then the others as well. Friends who never became your friends, the women you didn't marry, all their children, and the dead. I didn't tell you, but they're always included in these gatherings. Hesitant and shy, they hang back at first among the blossoming trees. You have only to say their names, to ask them inside. Everyone will find a place at your table. What more can I do? The glasses are filled, the children are quiet. My friend, it's time for you to speak.
Thank you, Daddy. You'll see that there's a hymn printed in your order of service. The words to this hymn are by William Channing Gannett, who was the minister who took this church toward transcendentalism and beyond Christianity. This was in the 1870s. The tune is new. The time signature is unusual. The choir will sing the whole hymn through while you're seated. Listen to it, let it in a little bit, and then after they've sung it through, stand and sing it through with us. Thank you.
I knew you could do it. Most everyone knows the story of Easter. How Jesus went to Jerusalem, even though he knew he would be arrested and condemned and crucified. And how the disciples couldn't even stay. You know, the disciples, Jan calls them the duh disciples. And how they couldn't even stay awake, not even for an hour, in the Garden of Gethsemane. And how after his arrest, they scattered like sheep in their fear. And how even Peter, the rock, the one on whom Jesus was to build his church, denied he'd ever known him. We know that he died on the cross and that his broken body was then taken and placed in a borrowed tomb. And we know that when the Sabbath was over, the women arriving at the tomb to anoint him found the great rock had been rolled away, the tomb unsealed, and the body nowhere to be seen. A belief in the bodily resurrection of Jesus is one of the acid tests of Orthodox Christianity. I have some sense that most of us here would fail it. Not only do we doubt the literal truth of the resurrection story, but we also invest entirely too much time attempting to refute dogmatic assertions with reasonable arguments. Jan reminded me earlier in the service that one of our dear little cousins is in a preschool which is run by a fundamentalist Christian church. And she came home the other day saying, "Did you know they killed God?" Well, Jan told this story to a group of Unitarian Universalist ministers, one of whom, a very, very well-read, very intelligent colleague of ours, shook her head and said, "They're starting Nietzsche young." And she meant it. So we are always investing far too much time in trying to refute such orthodox dogmatic assertions with reasonable arguments. But in a poem, we can do anything we want. And what is scripture if not a poem pointing toward the life of the Spirit? Might we not let Easter find new life in us this year? And now the guests are arriving. Everyone you expected, then others as well. Mary Magdalene is here, and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome, and a youth dressed all in radiant white. Judas Iscariot is here, still reeling from the role he played, the betrayal kiss still burning on his lips. There's Mary, his mother, her face a mask of grief, the very picture of compassion. We know and recognize them all. They're here with us today in this room. And the dead? I didn't tell you, but they're always included in these gatherings. Hesitant and shy, they hang back at first among the blossoming trees. Here, among the blossoming trees, I see Peter, the rock, the one on whom Jesus intended to build the church. His face is turned away. His clothes hang like a shroud. His eyes are the eyes of a ghost. Jesus may have risen now to sit at the right hand of God, but Peter remains down in the darkness. Peter still sleeps in the tomb of his despair. Do you remember his bravado? "Not me, Lord. Everybody else may turn away from you, but not me. I'm good. I'm staying right by you." And Jesus said, "I will tell you this, today, this very night, before the cock crows twice, you, Peter, will disown me three times." Peter again protested his innocence and his good intentions. And then after the arrest, and after Jesus was found guilty and condemned, Peter found himself in the courtyard outside the house of the high priest where the trial had been held. As the Gospel of Mark tells it, one of the high priest's serving maids came by and saw him there warming himself. She looked into his face and she said, "You were there too with this man from Nazareth, this Jesus." But he denied it. "I know nothing," he said. "I do not understand what you're talking about." Then he went outside into the porch, and the maid saw him there again and began to say to the bystanders, "He's one of them." And again, Peter denied it. And then a little later, the bystanders said to Peter, "Surely you're one of them. You must be. You're a Galilean." At this, he broke out into curses. And with an oath, he said, "I do not know the man you're speaking of." And then the cock crowed a second time. And Peter remembered how Jesus had said to him, "Before the cock crows twice, you will disown me three times." And he burst into tears. Can you imagine how he felt? He was Peter, the first one called to Christian service. He was Peter, the one on whose shoulders the mantle of Christian ministry had been placed. And at the first sign of trouble, he'd lost his courage and denied his Lord and denied his faith. His pride was surely shattered, his self-image undermined. His inner life must have been in utter disarray. Do you see him there? Look around. He's in the room. Perhaps he's right beside you in the pew. Look around. He's the one with his eyes cast down, so desperate and ashamed he can't even meet your gaze. He's lost and alone in the depths of despair. Now, I don't know what you believe. I assume few of you, if any, would hold to the orthodox doctrine of bodily resurrection, though I've heard quite a few of you speak of reincarnation. I don't know. I don't really hold to either of those worldviews, and it doesn't matter. What I do know is that the ministry of Jesus, the story of the Passion, the story of the man who died as an individual and rose again as a community is never silent in my service. For you and me, what one says one believes is far less important than how one lives one's life. I don't really care very much what you believe, and I certainly don't care whether you believe in the bodily resurrection. What I care about is whether or not you have learned to practice resurrection in your own life. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about rising up out of despair. I'm talking about refusing to fall into that greatest of all sins among liberal religious people, cynicism, even in the face, especially in the face of injustice and disparity. I'm talking about summoning the courage to live a hopeful life in spite of and because of the universality of suffering. This glad Easter morning, why not set aside belief? Set aside your cynicism. Open up your hearts and renew your commitment to practice. Even Peter, whose shame and despair was deeper than you or I can imagine, rose up again and built the church. How can we ask less of ourselves? How can we not learn to practice resurrection? Amen. Have no doubt about it, you frozen frogs. Spring is here. The blood restored runs freely through our veins. For you and I and all the world has come to life again. Like April, how can we not practice resurrection? Amen.